Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about children's health, babies, young teens, and even as you progress to be an adult. What does that really mean? It means maybe we threw away the book on how to be able to feed our children, how to be able to feed ourselves, and how to engage in the world around us with a healthier concept versus an easier concept. The idea that everything is easy, or go to the drive-thru. We go out to eat 4 or 5 times a week. We turn around, we have convenience food. And we say, oh, that has no influence on my children's health, not on my babies. Hey, my babies couldn't wait. First food I gave them was the French fries at McDonald's. See this all the time on social media. And we turn around and we say, what are the parents doing? And how is their health? And how are they then reflecting that with their children? And then their children are growing up in the same paradigm. Did we maybe miss a certain decade? Did we maybe miss 20, 30 years when we were eating healthy in the 40s, 50s, and 60s? There was no drive-thrus. People had a lot less disease then. They had a lot less health issues. We turned around and we say, I don't even know what the heck is wrong with me. There's just something wrong with me, and fix it with the pill today. Well, we're kind of like, let's turn around, stop the car, and maybe think about what we're doing here, and that's what we'll talk about today. My guest today is Dr. Jamie Kaufman. Her book is Acid Reflux in Children, How Healthy Eating Can Fix Your Child's Asthma, Allergies, Obesity, Nasal Congestion, Cough, and Croup. Now, I beg to ask you, is there one child that you have in your home or that you know that has not had several of these, maybe several times? Maybe it's chronic. Maybe it's, oh, that's just the name of my child. I changed the name of my child to Croup Kid because that's what he's got all the time. Well, maybe there's a reason why. Maybe there's something we can do about it, and it doesn't come in those little orange bottles. Dr. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure as well.
Well, Dr. Jamie, I'll tell you, I think, don't you think we've come to the point where, like, let's put the screech on the wheels because we're really going down the wrong way, right, with kids' health?
Well, I'd like to start with a rant. Americans are suckers.
Yeah.
Suckers for the food that has been engineered to be cheap and unhealthy. You're suckers to the idea that there's a pill or a procedure for every ailment. And you're a sucker for convenience rather than doing things the right way. And so what's happened is that virtually everyone's sick. And it's not just children, it's adults. When I was growing up, I had an ear infection. I'll never forget it. And the doctor came about 5 o'clock and gave me a shot of penicillin. That was a house call. In about 30 minutes, I felt relief. I never had allergies. I never had asthma. There were no obese kids in my class. Kids weren't sick. Today, most all of our children are born healthy, and by age 3, they're all sick. So they've got asthma.
Right.
They've got allergies. They've got a cold that never goes away. They've got recurrent croup. Or they may, if you have an obese child, think about that. We never had obese
mm-hmm.
children. So what's happened
right.
in my lifetime, in our lifetimes, is a diet that is intrinsically unhealthy, and all the unhealthy things, all the diseases, are completely reversible without medication. And furthermore, the medication doesn't fix them anyway. So that's my rant.
Absolutely. And you know what, too, Dr. Jamie, is the idea that I think why are we having so much resistance in being able to change the diet of people these days and their children is that it's almost like the parents nowadays are the ones that grew up eating fast food. They grew up eating unhealthy, and that is the way they always knew. So almost for them, it's almost like having to learn how to be able to eat healthy. But not only that, it brings up a lot of resistance among elders, parents, young children, because one will say, oh, well, I never ate that way. I didn't worry about it. The other will say, oh, but we always ate this way. We always ate healthy. And another will say, I don't even know what you're talking about. So there seems to be a lot of conflict between a lot of these different age groups of people in how we'll be able to, you know, feed our children. But if you really look
nobody's ever told them that your diet is terrible before.
Right, right. And I think they do that because of shame and guilt. Do you know what I mean? In other words, I'm not going to tell you something and I don't want a doctor to tell me that because then, oh, I made a mistake, or, oh, it's my problem, or I did something wrong. We all know about Americans. They're really great about that, you know? And even if you look at it, if you look, most of my, I have some guests on the radio and I also have a lot of colleagues in Europe, and they say, well, we don't even know what you're talking about because we don't eat that way in the first place, don't you think?
No question. I mean, it's an American problem. But I will tell you that where the Western diet, we call it the Western diet, goes, disease follows. The Chinese, when I was young, were 800 million starving peasants who were living on rice and fish and vegetables. And now they have diabetes and obesity and heart disease and asthma and reflux and all of the and by the way, it's all the same epidemic. And so wherever this diet goes, wherever McDonald's and all the fast food goes, wherever Coca-Cola and all the soda pop goes, disease follows.
And it's almost, I think it's really the complex, the idea of time. I have to do this. I have to get that. I have to be that. You know, we're all about the concept about the outside world, when really, if our inside terrain is not working correctly, is not balanced, is not performing what it's supposed to do, or even what it's not, it's like rebelling. I almost think of acid reflux as a rebellion. It's sort of like saying, dude, I'm not ready for that. Or, hey, I don't want to do that today. Or, ooh, that doesn't look good to me or sound good to me. You know, I think we, if we think about that, we really need to go back to the inner being of our life instead of all this outside stuff, right?
But there's a positive frame, and the positive frame is that you can take control of your life. You can stop seeing all these doctors. There's an ad on TV about this woman who looks like a young woman, and she's talking about her family of six, and they're worried that the medicines that they're all on are going to cost the same thing as their mortgage. And so
right.
My question is, why does a young family of six have six people all on medications?
Right.
When I was young, nobody in my family was on any medication. And so the positive frame is, oh, by the way, it may not be very difficult to fix your child's asthma. Oh, by the way, if you all eat healthier, the blood pressure goes down, the diabetes goes away, and all of these things are fixable. So the idea that I like to really proffer is that this is an empowerment opportunity, but like any other moment, there has to be sort of this aha moment when people say, wait a minute, it is fixable, it is going to take work, but it's worth it.
Right. And it really truly needs to become a way of life versus just something you're going to do to be able to fix the moment. Let's talk a little bit about acid reflux. I almost like to say, people say, oh, that's just when you oh, I get it. You know, I burp all the time, or I feel like, oh, my stomach's upset, or I have indigestion. And really, I would say to parents sometimes, so what your book is really about is, if you assume that the fluids in the stomach are colored blue, okay? And if at any time the stomach fluids might move or migrate, to a different area, which is up the esophagus, we say, what happens is that this blue color kind of diffuses out. It finds other ways to get out. It finds other ways to reach into it. It's almost like fingers. It's almost like when you unbreak a dam, the water goes in places you never knew it might go to. That's how we are starting out the concept of our today's talk about why things that are going on in our stomach would affect our respiratory tract or would affect anything else in the child's body. If you think of the blue dye, it kind of diffuses out, and how far and how extensive is that reach of that color? And that might be where it could have an effect, right?
Well, no question. I started out as a laryngologist treating predominantly people with voice disorders and problems of the voice box. And so the vocal cords are blue. That's why most people have hoarseness. And the lungs are blue. That's why most people have asthma. And the sinuses are blue. And the nose is blue. And the eustachian tubes that block the ears up that need tubes are blue. And the tonsils are blue. And so the bigger question is, if all these areas in the respiratory tract are blue, why don't doctors know this? Because the part of the sucker American idea is that they believe they're doctors, when indeed physicians receive zero training in nutrition. When I say zero, I mean not a single hour. And yet patients think their doctors are good about making recommendations about their diet. And the thing is this, is that respiratory reflux, and that's a new term, reflux or acid reflux. Let me do the terms. Reflux means backflow. And most people think of heartburn and indigestion. But once the backflow comes up above into the throat, that's respiratory reflux. That's the respiratory tract, and it's all connected. So if you lie down at night and a puddle of stuff comes up into your throat, it's in your voice box, it's in your sinuses, it's in your nose, it's in your ears, and, of course, most serious, it's in your lungs. And so it turns out in my practice and in looking at data that the whole idea of reflux is a little bit warped to believe that reflux is about heartburn and indigestion, when it turns out only 20% of people with reflux have heartburn and indigestion. So the rest have, what do they have? Too much throat mucus, a stuffy nose, ear infections, a sensation of a lump in the throat, difficulty swallowing, and, of course, the biggest one of all, are breathing problems. So the conclusion we've come to is that 70% of these breathing problems, 70%, 70, are related to respiratory reflux, and that respiratory reflux is usually, quote, silent, end quote.
Right. You know, well,
silent means no heartburn.
Right. You know what I think, though, too? We look at children. We say, what's the first thing that goes on? They have ear infections when they're babies. Well, of course, because the eustachian tubes are turned a certain way, they haven't quite dropped down yet. They were just, you know, they were parallel. That's how the child is born. And as your body develops, they come down a little bit further, and then they're able to drain much more effectively. But when you give babies a bottle at night or you're feeding them right before they go to sleep, of course, there's going to be some backup there. Then you look at children and you say, oh, but then they turn around and they have all of these allergies now, and they start taking out their adenoids. They start taking out their tonsils. They put tubes in their ears. They try all of these things from the top down, and then really the problem is from the bottom up, correct?
Well, yes, and by the way, you brought me to the first no-no. No bottle in the crib, no bottle in the bed. The feeding should not be lying down. And so that is all children, when they're small, mainly infants, have some reflux. That's just because the whole system is immature. Even the valves and the normal physiology has not been established until about age one or one and a half. And so when you give a child a bottle in bed, they are going to continuously reflux. And when they fall asleep, they're going to continuously reflux. And so this is an added factor to the anatomic immaturity, and you see more ear infections in such children. By the way, if I said nothing else to parents, I'll tell you a quick story. A woman in my office has a 7-year-old child who used to have asthma. And I'd get a call in the morning, I'm going to be late to work. We were in the emergency room last night with my child's asthma. So when I started talking to her, I realized she was giving her child a bedtime snack of ice cream or cookies and a big chocolate milk. And so I prevailed upon her. I said, now you have dinner, you have dessert, then you have reading, bath, homework, television, and then bed, and no snacks of any kind after dinner. And aha, surprise, no surprise, the child's asthma went away.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit DrJeanetteGallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
I think it's one of the hardest things to say to parents is that your ear infections is a result of something that is so easily fixed, or your asthma, or your croup. You know, while there are other indications for croup and asthma and things, the majority we're talking about, I mean, I had, you know, now that the days of social media, there's certain families, you know, and you would notice they were always having having all of their meals out. These families would always post all of their kids out eating out. And they would have chocolate milk and donuts every single day. And then they would turn around, they would have some kind of fast food stuff, you know, for lunch or whatever. And then for dinner, it was, again, take out something in a styrofoam container. And I can even remember the days that some of these children, they were very sick. Oh, we just came from the doctor, and we had to stop and get some donuts and chocolate milk. And I went, oh, my Lord, you know, that's exactly what you're propagating. And I think it's so hard sometimes for parents who may have heard the talk on social media or talk from their doctors or from other parents saying, oh, no, if it's an ear infection, you have to go get a drug to fix it because that's what's wrong with it. It has nothing to do with the diet. Or if you turn around and you have allergies all the time, or if you have asthma, oh, no, it must be something else. So you take an anti-this or an anti-that. I think the conversation is hard to break, but what we're here to do today with Dr. Jamie Kaufman, again, the book Acid Reflux in Children, is to say you can get much better control over your children's health by changing their diet. Dr. Jamie, don't you think that sometimes when we say to other physicians also, perhaps maybe a change in diet would be a great thing. Don't you think physicians are sometimes, that's not in my wheelhouse, go refer them to someone else, yes?
No, they don't even refer them to someone else. Here's what they say. Just take your pill and eat normally. And, normal, and normally should be in quotes, because normally isn't normal. There are some really important principles, and I think one of them that we need to discuss with parents is sugar addiction. So you see children that are having juice and juicy juice and soft drinks, sugar, and then they're having snacks. Did you know that 80%? Of the products in a supermarket have sugar added?
Something
as simple as say, chicken broth. And so, you know, if you need chicken broth, look for a brand that doesn't have have sugar, and that's the one you stock up on if you cook with chicken broth. But what happens is children become sugar addicts, and when they become sugar addicts, they need more and more and more sugar. An alcoholic, at least, will eventually fall asleep, but the sugar addicts will keep going. The problem is it's not just the sugar. Sugar is like the Trojan horse that gets the food in, but then it's all the fat, and so you're getting a lot of chemicals and bad fat. These are all processed, and these have the snack foods in particular are really horrendous in terms of nutritional value and their effect on health. So that gets to the question, what's a healthy snack? Fruits and vegetables. You should have five servings a day. By the way, that's for adults and for children. And I might add, and you'll find this interesting, on Monday we're sending out a press release. Dr. Colin Campbell, who wrote the China Study, which is one of the biggest studies of nutrition, and its effect on diet, we're not trying to nominate him for a Nobel Prize. And so we started a petition online. It's Dr. Campbell for, it's a number for, Nobel.com. But Dr. Campbell has shown that our diet is related to heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. And in laboratory animals, if he takes animals and gives them a high-protein diet, meaning casein, tumor growth rates go up. And as you decrease animal protein, the tumor rates go down. And what his study showed is the healthiest diet in the world is a whole food plant-based diet. That's vegan.
Right.
So that's right. A paradigm shift to ask somebody who basically hangs out at fast food places and for, July 4th is doing cheeseburgers and fries
right.
and nachos and chips and all of the high-fat desserts. Let's have, cupcakes and all that stuff. It's a paradigm shift. It's a wake-up, and some people just don't want to do it. But the irony is in my practice, which, of course, is people who have problems, I find the vast majority of people get it, and they're willing to have a go at it. And we graduate about 70% of our patients. That means people come to us with respiratory diseases and reflux, and within a year, they're off medication, and their reflux and all their other stuff is gone. And in many cases, they're no longer taking blood pressure medicines, cholesterol medicines, and diabetes medicines. In many cases, they've lost 40 or 50 pounds. And so this whole concept of a wake-up call that there is a way to go, which is now, you're right, no longer a traditional healthy diet. But it is going to have to be a family kind of discussion, a family kind of decision. You can't make your child eat healthy if the whole rest of the family, eats the old normal, quote, normal, end quote, crap. Pardon the word crap, but it is crap.
Yeah, and it's really difficult.
I don't even go to the middle of a supermarket. I stay around the periphery.
Yeah. It's really difficult, I think, for people to say that we have to make a change and it's going to infringe upon my, quote, time. You know how people are. You mean I have to do something extra that I don't want to have to do? You know? Well, let's talk, Dr. Jamie, a little bit about pH, about the stomach, People will say, I must just be doing too many acidy things, and that's the answer. Well, that is part of the answer. It's also true that if you're eating whole foods that have enzymes, that have their own mechanisms inside of those foods to be able to break down what you're eating, to be able to perform all the biochemistry and chemistry things that needs to, and the physiological things that need to go on in your stomach, to be able to say, I'm going to take this apple and it's actually going to help my body. Wow, that's a huge process. That is a huge mystical process that has to go on inside your body. But if you give it the right foods, all the parts and the pieces that need to be there will be there. If you turn around and give it dead food, you don't have those enzymes. You don't have all of the vitamins, the minerals, and the nutrients. So you end up being deficient in this, that, or the other. You end up having your body having to work harder to break down something that's actually a foreign object to it. And then, hence, the foreign object turns into what is an allergy, a foreign object. If something feels foreign to your body, autoimmune disease, it feels foreign to your body. Well, stop putting foreign stuff in there and put things in there that are supposed to work with the mechanisms, correct?
Well, yes, absolutely. You couldn't be more correct. But you brought up a point that I think has to be talked about, this question about acid. So let me address it. Actually, this acid reflux in children is the fourth in a series of four books on reflux. In the first book, Dropping Acid, The Reflux Diet Cookbook and Cure, is the anchor book in the reflux category. It's a New York Times bestseller. So Dropping Acid was written because we figured out that there was so much acid, particularly in things in bottles and cans, that it was causing damage. If you look at all soda pop, it has the same acid level as stomach acid. And the reason is because in 1973, after an outbreak of food poisoning, the FDA said you need to put a little acid in things to kill bacteria. Unfortunately,
right.
Nobody told the manufacturers don't put in too much acid. So we do recommend all soft drinks, all juices, all energy stuff, go. If you want to drink something, drink water. In my family, that's what we do. Big pitcher goes on the dinner table. Everybody gets a glass of ice, and we don't drink anything but water for dinner. During the day, I have some coffee in the morning. I occasionally have an iced tea, but it doesn't come out of a bottle, because if it comes out of a bottle, by law, it has acid. By the way, the second book is called The Chronic Cough Enigma, and it's about chronic cough, which is a very, very common symptom, and there's really no other content online except that book. The third book is Dr. Kaufman's Acid Reflux Diet, and that includes vegetarian and gluten-free recipes, and that's because people are requesting, and then now comes acid reflux in children. So I think that the point that I would make in having that discussion is that you got to get the milk and the juice and the juicy juice and the soda and the other soft drinks and especially the caffeinated, carbonated ones out of the house. And they can have that as a special treat, perhaps, if you go out to a restaurant. And that the whole concept of, watching television and saying, oh, boy, that chalupa looks really good, without having any idea what the nutritional
right.
consequences of that chalupa are, is problematic. So we're saying the same thing here. We're saying this is a wake-up call, and it's time to begin looking at your own diet carefully and educate yourselves.
And also, too, the idea of we're not talking, is your stomach going to exist with zero acid? The idea is that the stomach needs acid to be able to keep all the sphincters closed tightly. And the idea that if you turn...
I'm going to interrupt you for that one. The stomach, there's no such thing as not enough acid. Everyone makes acid, 100%.
Right.
Okay, so there's not. You don't need acid from foods to make
outside
acid.
Outside sources.
Yeah, you don't need outside sources of acid. And the stomach acid belongs in the stomach, and when it comes up out of the stomach, that's when we start to see all these other problems.
Right. Yeah, and it's also about being able to, what the body knows what to do. When it breaks down food, it needs acid to break down food. But the idea that, that it constantly is rising up, and people say, well, oh, that's no big deal. I'm not going to worry about it until it causes a problem later. Well, really, it can change the cell lineage in your esophagus. It can change, a lot of people say, well, why do people who... sometimes alcoholics, they turn around, they have esophageal cancer. It's because it's consistently always that backflow. We look around, we say, why do they have throat cancer? Why do they have pneumonia all the time? All of these are very similar ideas. We're taking it to the other side of the extreme. And what we're really saying is that when you eat, things should go down, they should be broken down, they should be processed, and then they should be eliminated. Anything changing that pattern is the problem. And when you change it even slightly is when you have more problems. Can we talk for a second about cough and croup, Dr. Jamie? Because I think that's, I think I see with children all the time. I've been in healthcare myself, you know, 40 years. And you see the first it's the ear infections. Then when they can talk, it's their sore throat and then their runny nose. And then you attribute it to this, that, or the other. Then it's time to take out the tonsils and the adenoids. And then it's time for things in the ears, you know. And then it's always, and then we come into, then it's having croup issues. You know, constant progression. I think so sometimes if you really can't get to the root of the problem, you're kind of really spinning your wheels. You're doing a lot of other detrimental processes and therapies and surgeries on a child that may affect them in their later life, yes?
Well, the surgeries may make them worse. I think we need to talk about croup. I just want to make one comment in the last portion. Esophageal cancer is the fastest-growing cancer in the United States in terms of
right.
prevalence. It's up, listen to the words, 850% since the 70s. It's all reflux-related.
Wow.
When you talk about croup, croup comes in two different forms. Croup comes, a child gets an upper respiratory infection, it's a cold, they, you know, run a little fever, they look sort of crummy, they get a runny nose, you know it's a virus, and then that night they have this barky, croupy cough. That is called laryngotracheitis. It's a viral infection, and the croup is the result of the area just below the vocal cords becoming swollen. So it's a viral infection. Laryngotracheitis, or croup, true croup, occurs once. I mean, sometimes children even need to be hospitalized, but it occurs once. So if a child has recurrent croup, it's reflux, period. Second, if your child has asthma, quote, asthma, end quote, and they have trouble breathing in during an attack, it's reflux. Only trouble during getting the air out, exhalation, is asthma. So if you have a child who has trouble getting air in or has recurrent croup, they've got big-time respiratory reflux. What does it mean? No bedtime snacks, change of diet, no overeating, no skipped meals. You have breakfast, you have a snack, you have lunch, you have a snack. And then the evening meal should not be the big, huge refueling for the meal, for the day meal, followed by let's have some ice cream, let's have some stuff, and then a bedtime snack. So that those kids need a real intervention because croup is dangerous. Croup can result in something called subglottic stenosis, which can be lifelong breathing problems and repeated surgeries. So croup that recurs and recurs, child gets croup every week or two, is a big deal. And in my opinion, it's 99%, or let's say 95% reflux.
Let's talk for a second, Dr. Jamie, about when kids get done from one thing, they get out of school and you've got them in the car and you're pumping them up with food because then they're going to extracurricular activities or sports or whatever that might be. And they're pumping down the food and then they're going about and they're jumping and they're running and they're swimming. I mean, you end up with so much aspiration, the kids don't even know what it is. You turn around and then the kids turn around and they're coughing or they're choking or they feel like they can't breathe and you say, oh, it must be too much exercise or maybe you need some fresh air or whatever. And there's no dialogue, and I will tell you zero dialogue, that it could be any type of reflux. Honestly, I can tell you over my many decades, no one has really talked about what you talk about in your book, acid reflux in children, as being a complication of eating, going out and doing sports, doing all this other stuff, and having all of these issues in children because the kids don't know what to tell you and they don't know how to describe something that's foreign to them. And the parents don't even have the language and the knowledge to be able to share that with the doctor. And the doctor's turning around and saying, oh, well, that's not it anyway. So your book, I think, Acid Reflux in Children, is a huge awakening to parents about a paradigm shift, not only in what they're eating, but also in the way they perform with their children, in the way they interact with them, in the way they feed them, and the times and the places, and maybe changing a whole way of life, yes?
Yes, well, you brought up an important point that I need to focus on first, which is, in general, it's a good idea to exercise and then eat, not eat and then exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So if you exercise in the morning, don't have big breakfast and then go to the gym. You can have a banana, you can have a small smoothie and a cup of coffee. But if your stomach is full, we see a lot of kids who have exercise-induced asthma, and for sure they should not have a quiet stomach without any acid or pepsin. It should be quiet for exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fuel is after refueling of muscles and all that is done days before. You've heard about carb loading for marathon runners.
Right,
believe me, it's
right.
Not the morning of the marathon that they have the carb loading. So that, you know, I think that there are a set of basic principles that apply. That you don't want to have a quiet stomach before you go to bed without food, not overfilled, not filled at all, really. And for exercise, you want to have a minimal amount of a little starter energy if you need it. But the meal should be after the exercise. And then a time of meal is important. The later you eat, the more likely everyone in your family is to have reflux. And let's just talk about cleaning out the house for a minute. In my opinion, you shouldn't have snack foods, ice cream, soft drinks, fruit juices, and milk in the house. You should train everyone to drink water. That's what you drink in the house. And you ought to get rid of all the snack foods. So what do? You take your child to the supermarket, and you go let your child pick out apples. Okay, let's talk about apples. For refluxers, red apples are better than green apples, and that's because green apples
right.
tend to be too acidic. So let your child pick up apples. You say, oh, I want to try a Fuji and a Braeburn and a Red Delicious. And you say, okay, and you figure out which one you like the best. And you say, what kind of vegetables should we have tonight? And you say, if we make a big salad, what can we put in it for fun? And then they go and they buy some shrimp. They say, oh, that's going to be our main meal if we have shrimps big on a big. We got a whole thing of shrimp for the family. The shrimp is on sale. And so you begin thinking differently if you take your children to the supermarket looking for healthy food. And I think it's good for the parent, and I think it's good for the child as well.
You know, it's so funny you say that because my children, when they grew up, when they sat down, you know how the olden days you used the olden days, like a long time ago, you used to get a salad first and then soup. Well, you get your bread, salad, then your soup, then your entree, right?
Yep.
Well, when I would see the kids at home, they would have their vegetables on a tiny saucer before their food came because I was still cooking it and they were always hungry. And if they finished that, then they got the rest of the food. And kids would always say, oh, my gosh, we're having treat again for food. And most of their friends would say, what are you talking about? And they'd say, we had broccoli. We had trees for supper, you know. And it would be so funny. And I remember making a vegetable soup with whatever I had one day. And I had some purple cabbage. And, of course, I threw it in. And they said, oh, Barney soup again, you know. And we laughed about it because, you know, the purple cabbage had turned the soup purple. And I think that always the idea of having your kids to engage in food and helping with food process really does make a big difference, don't you think?
You've raised two important points. The first is that I have my grandchildren help me prepare. I go to someone and they say, would you mind peeling these carrots? And then I say to someone else, would you mind putting out all the water? And would you mind setting the table? And would you mind helping me finish the soup? We're going to put cilantro in. Can you chop cilantro without cutting your fingers off? And so I engage the children, and I'm talking about grandchildren now, in helping me in the kitchen. And the second thing you raised, which is something that's really in my family, we actually goes back, by the way, when I was a kid, this is what we did. My mother put dinner on the table every night at 6.
Mm-hmm.
We always had the salad as the first course. It wasn't served right. with the meal as something you might put
mm-hmm.
on your plate. So we serve salads, and our salads are exciting. I'm personally making tricolored salad with arugula and radicchio, which probably is that little red thing you never ever bought, and Belgian endives. And then I put a couple of little walnuts on and some cranberries and a tiny bit of drops, literally, of balsamic vinegar, a good one, and some good quality olive oil. And, you know, and you see them, you know, the grandchildren say, I save me some of the bottom. And they know that, mm-hmm. that the cranberries tend to fall to the bottom. So after you've served everyone in the salad, you go around and you finish the bottom and everyone gets a few more little of the sweet things. But when you compare that to the salad is on the side, there are already two hot dogs and a whole bunch of chips and other stuff, the salad somehow gets bypassed.
Right.
So, you know, this whole question of how do you transform your home, I'm not saying that you shouldn't eat meat. But I am saying you should reduce the amount of red meat. You should be eating beef once or twice a week. It shouldn't be the evening meal, preferably. It gets digested very, very slowly. Chicken is not as healthy as people think. It turns out to be the number one cholesterol-containing food in the American diet because of the amount of chicken that people eat. There's a lot of cholesterol, even though it's a white meat. And so you start thinking about fish and vegetarian dishes, and they can be delicious. Last night for dinner, I cooked portobello mushrooms in a delicious little, I use a little bit of smoked paprika and thyme and salt in the oven. I served them on chickpea pasta. I'm gluten-free. Chickpea pasta, which is loaded with good carbs, and chickpeas are healthy. And so that gets us some of the other things that are healthy. Avocados are healthy. I take toast some bread. I use gluten-free bread and cut up a whole avocado and put it on with a little olive oil. It's a delicious first course or snack. Fish tends to be healthy, although I do recommend wild-caught fish and not farm fish. And, of course, that's a problem because some of the best fish very expensive. King salmon can be up to $28 a pound, so that's not
right.
for everyday use. So you start thinking about, you know, planning. One of the things a parent can do is to think about what kind of snacks am I going to have in the house? What do I need to buy? Should I take my children and picking them out? And try to stay away from the middle of the grocery. On the outside where you see all the fruits and vegetables and organic stuff, And try to get as much of that stuff as you can. And, you know, and be seasonal. This time of year, corn on the cob is good. So there's a vegetable. Yeah, it's got a lot of carbs, but it's a whole lot different than having a whole bowl of sugary cereal as a snack or having a big bag of chips or even worse, eating cookies that are loaded with sugar and loaded with fat. So you start to think about a program for your family. And one of the things that I recommend, in all my books, you'll find a meal planner where you can just put it on a Xerox machine, a copying machine, and then say, okay, I'm going to plan a whole week. And then you figure out, okay, how many bananas do I need for this size family? Oh, guess what? Okay, we only need 6. And if I'm going to make a smoothie for breakfast, what else do I need? And by the way, when I have fruits and vegetables, as they start to time out, meaning the potato, the bananas getting old, before they turn, I cut them up and I throw them in my freezer. And so
right.
I have smoothies based upon how much fruit's in the freezer. So I don't necessarily plan to have smoothies, but I look and I have this big gallon bag of frozen fruit. And then I usually will add one more thing that's sweet and gives color. So they're fairly expensive, but I'll buy frozen cherries or frozen raspberries because there's a lot of sugar in them, and they add good color. So you end up with something that's not brown, but rather a nice-looking color. And so, you know, this whole idea of cooking and eating healthy is a family-wide program. And if the parents are overweight, if the parents have diabetes, if the parents have high blood pressure and high cholesterol, and in family history of stroke and cancer and heart attacks, you know, it's a reboot. But I think more people are willing to do it than you think, particularly young people.
Right. I think also, too, because there's so much social media around today, is that they turn around and they say, oh, I'm trying this. What do you think? So there's a lot of kids nowadays who are really starting to eat healthy. Their parents are saying, you know, I need to make a shift here. And I think it's a really great idea to be able to say there's something else that could help me besides not feeling well. We're turning around and saying,
you know, it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. There is a revolution beginning.
Right.
And to my surprise, it's the millennials, particularly millennials
yes.
who have babies.
Mm-hmm.
They're going vegan by the millions.
Right.
And here's why.
Yeah.
You save yourself, you save the planet. How do you save the planet? The amount
mm-hmm.
of feed that's given to one cow would feed a village of children. And all of the
mm-hmm.
methane and all of the environmental consequences of these animals, and
right.
not to mention inhumane. So all of these things you start to think about of, you know, where do you get your food? Where did it come from? What's in it? And so I would give some very specific recommendations that you really limit fast food, that you look for the healthy option. Even at the famous chicken place, you can get the grilled one instead of the one that's fried and battered. And that you begin to think about using a fewer condiments. You should always put on your own salad dressing, your own condiments, and your own sauces. Just ask for them on the side because
mm-hmm.
you'll probably use less. And so you start, people start to take healthy eating as a family activity. And, oh, the 12-year-old daughter comes and says, I heard that the aloe vera leaf is healthy, and it's really good
right.
for smoothies. I saw one in the, can we get one? I saw it over there in the corner, you know, next to the spices. And they cut
mm-hmm.
a piece of aloe vera and they plop it, the middle part, into the smoothie, and ooh, it's as smooth as silk. And you start to see that there is a family interest in it. And I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, I think it is so cool. You know, in closing, I there's a story, you know, we lived in Arizona for quite a while, and I had terrible sunburn, and my daughter went outside and cut up the whole aloe vera plant and put it all on my back, and all the sunburn was gone the next day, you know? Or when my kids would go to school in the morning and they'd have their echinacea in their orange juice, and it'd be like, oh, we don't have to worry about stopping at the nurse. We're taking care of ourselves, you know? So I think it's really about the idea of empowering kids to understand about the world of nature around them, that things that grow out in their backyard can be something that can nourish them. Things that are out there can actually help heal their body. And it's to be able to understand and engage in that. I think to plant a few things, you know, even before we did this show today, I have some salad sprouts that I had to rinse this morning. They're almost ready to start going, and that will be what I'll eat for the next 4 to 5 days for lunch. It's just sprouts with, you know, some really good flatbread. So I think the idea is about being able to engage in things, but to enjoy it. I mean, it's not supposed to be entertainment coming at us from outside. We're supposed to enjoy the world we're in, and I think that's most important, don't you think?
And I think, you know, you enjoy the world a lot more if you're healthy.
Right, right. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Jamie, can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That'd be wonderful.
Well, first of all, my name is spelled Kaufman, K-O-U-F-M-A-N. And if you Google Voice Institute of New York, you'll find me. There are some pretenders around it, but the real Voice Institute of New York is me. If you Google dropping acid, you're going to end up going to Amazon. And if you put my name in, you'll find all four books. By the way, last thing I want to mention, by the way, is acid reflux in children has a chapter which is a kid-friendly conversation. that you could read with a, you know, a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old about reflux and all of the healthy eating elements. And so I think, you know, if you Google dropping acid or Voice Institute of New York or acid reflux in children, we have a website for that, refluxinchildren.com. You'll see that we have a blog and a lot of information. So that's how you find me.
Well, Dr. Kaufman, it was such a pleasure to have you with us today. I really think the idea, so many different ways that we can say about engaging your child in life and eating healthy, and it's just about saying it different ways, saying it, these are things that we see. Maybe things will make a change in your body. Wouldn't that be a great way to have a healthy child, yes?
Yes, it'll make your child's asthma go away.
Yeah, and that's worth $1 million sometimes, you know?
Well, listen, thank you very much for having me on. We've had a lovely discussion, and I hope it helps your listeners.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. If you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Jamie Kaufman, and the book is Acid Reflux in Children, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page. It'll go directly to her website. And it's really about being able to be engaged in the world around you, and there are many changes that you can make as a parent. Time to step up and say, you know what, I've about had it. I need to be able to do and help my child eat and be the best that they can possibly be. It's really about being also the best parent. So really, many changes are on the way. If you have these issues, it's not very hard. Just get Dr. Kaufman's book. In the back, there are many, many recipes. There are lots of charts. There's some simple tests. There's simple question and answers. You say, oh, I've never even realized this. So please do check it out. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.